what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chick Eubelis, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
Do this correctly, and I can mess it up, and I did. Welcome to Southern Sense, live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, Stitcher,
iTunes. Yeah, you were a mum there for the first 3 seconds.
Oh, we're getting used to this new format. We're up here on StreamYard, streaming onto all of our other platforms, and they will be uploaded to Your News as well as Substack later on. Oh, man. I'm your hostess with the least most is the Radiant Chickadee Annie, along with my co-host, author Curtis C.S. Bennett. We've got ourselves a lot to talk about today, Curtis. We've got our friend Mark Tapscott from the Epoch Times coming back to join us.
Great.
We also have from the Heritage Foundation, Jack Fitzhenry. And let me get his little thing up here. Jack is the legal fellow at the Edmund Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at heritage.org. So we'll be talking to him later on. We've got a lot going on, and it's a crazy, crazy world out there today. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, it's just... You can't make some of this stuff up as I'm playing around with the background. We've got Letitia James going after Trump for the civil verdict, the civil penalty. Mm-hmm. And you've got George Stephanopoulos, going after Nancy Mace with her support of Donald Trump. And now Trump is suing George Stephanopoulos for libel. Because George Stephanopoulos called him a rapist. He has never been convicted of rape. He has been found civilly liable for what is deemed to be sexual harassment, abuse, whatever you want to call it, against E. Jean Carroll, who can't even remember when the incident occurred, much less what year it occurred. I don't know how that could possibly occur. A woman knows the date and time something as drastic as that happens, but she can't seem to remember, not even the year. I guess she went to the Joe Biden school of thought.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, these guys are, you know, pulling out all the stops to stop 45. So I'm not surprised. I'm just wondering what they have under their sleeves for the elections in a few months.
Oh, well, I'll tell you what. I got a new book in the mail from one of the publicists that actually burst that wide open. Scott Walker, CEO of Capitalist Investments, wrote this great book called Arabella. And no one really knows the name Arabella. And it seems it is a dark money depository for the likes of George Soros and the other ilk to hide money to attack conservative individuals, especially Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. To steal the elections, to change public media thought. It is a scary book. It came in the mail today, so I haven't completely gone through it. I haven't read it, obviously, if it only came in the mail today. But I thumbed through the description, and it's scary. Yeah, there is dark money out there that's going after him. But, you know, we keep on bouncing back.
Yeah. Here in Florida, you know, I worked the polls during early voting and primary day. And I'm surprised we're still using those machines from Dominion. Mm-hmm. And those are the same machines that we had a lot of problems with back in 2020. I would have thought DeSantis would have gotten rid of those by now. And that they're still in use going into the 2024 is, you know, disconcerting. So...
Well,
I just don't know.
Well, we have guests coming up over the next couple of weeks. And one of the people we're going to be talking about exactly in that, oops, I forgot to turn my phone off. Pardon me. Sorry. My bad. One of the people we're going to be talking about interviewing is going to be Patrick Byrne, who's got a book out. And he questioned the election in 2020 and the things that he uncovered. He ended up becoming public enemy number one in the eyes of the liberals. Even a lot of conservatives were saying he was public enemy number one. And he exposes a lot of things, from the Russia hoax to election fraud to a lot of other crap that's going on, including what is going on in Iran. He's been in the middle of a lot of things. And it's going to be an interesting interview coming up. We also have coming up Larry Schweikert. He's got a new book out, A Patriot's History of Globalism, Its Rise and Decline. I don't know if it's in decline just yet, but that's what he's written about, and we'll be interviewing him on that. And there was something interesting that came up over the last couple of days, and I saw an interview up on Newsmax about a current classical artist, and his work is absolutely phenomenal. He's done some sculptures of Hellenic and Roman gods that are so lifelike, so real. He's also done a lot of ones to honor the military. And this one has been 12 years in the making. It's called A Soldier's Journey. And it is a huge panel. I can't tell you how long it is, but it is all life-size statues in the panel of World War II soldiers, nurses, wounded. It depicts parts of the battlefield and everything else that goes that went on during World War I. It is an amazing piece, and it will be unveiled in the upcoming months, and we're going to be talking to him about that. And it's a lot of your life to dedicate, and he has a whole massive team and studio that works with him. And I can't even tell you how many hours. I mean, I couldn't do it in my lifetime. And he's had that many people working on it in order to accomplish this feat. And we got great guests coming up. A lot of phenomenal guests coming up.
And well, sounds like he's a modern day Michelangelo.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That you can call him that. Modern day Michelangelo.
Miguel.
Yeah. So, like I said, we've got a lot to talk about in our upcoming shows, a lot to do. That said, we're going to be talking again to, Jack FitzHenry, about a lot of issues that are going on, dealing with, here we go. Let me pull this up. Social media, government censorship of social media. And right now we've got this battle going on over TikTok. So we're going to be talking to him about that, as well as how the government has been using social media platforms to censor our voices. And those watching and listening to the show know that we have had our show numerous occasions censored and taken down, not just episodes, but being completely banned on Facebook on several occasions, as well as on YouTube. I've had to constantly go back and reopen YouTube pages and under different names. So yes, if people are looking for me on YouTube, it'd be YouTube 469. I'm sorry, Southern Sense 4692 over on YouTube. But if you go to our home page, which is southernsense.net, there is a link to the new Facebook and YouTube pages. So I see that we do have some people already up in chatting on the pages. So I want to thank you guys, our friend James, as always. God bless you. So we're going to be watching the comments there as we do the show. And I'll try to keep them up to date. So it looks like we've got also people all over the place watching us and sharing with us. So I want to thank you guys. That said, those that watch and listen to us know that we start off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And with this new format, we're doing this in new and more novel ways. So Curtis is going to step aside, and I'm going to start with the dedication. And today's dedication is going to go out to Police Officer Darren McMichael of the Arlington Police Department in Texas. His end of watch was Thursday, September 21st of 2023. And this is coming from theshorthorn.com by Isaac Epit. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. And he writes, outside Crossroads Christian Church, row upon row of police motorcycles and cruisers lined up. In one instance, over a dozen police motorcycles from different precincts revved their engines. As each group moved out, the Arlington Police Department unit had a hole in their formation. Darren McMichael, Arlington Police Department officer, wasn't on his department motorcycle along with them. The 24-year APD veteran died in a highway accident on Thursday, September 21, 2023. Law enforcement and the community gathered at Crossroads Christian Church to mourn Michael, 51. He graduated from UTA in 1995 and was a part of the APD motorcycle unit for the last 13 years, according to a previous Shorthorn reporting. Community members, family, and other uniformed officers sought comfort in one another, embracing and finding solace amongst the group. Arlington Police Chief Al Jones thanked the community for the support the department received after McMichael's passing. Jones said McMichael was a dedicated member of the close-knit family that is the Arlington Police Department's motorcycle unit. He will be missed, but never forgotten, Jones said. Among the spectators were police officers with uniforms showcasing cities from Fort Worth to Moore, Oklahoma. These officers lined up outside the church after the service and held a salute for McMichael. An American flag was draped over his casket being carried by other officers. A few feet from his casket, another American flag. Oh, please pardon me. Let me try to keep this going. And a few feet from his casket, another American flag cast a shadow, held aloft by an Arlington Fire Department hook and ladder truck. The solemn moment passed as officers fired a three-volley salute. McMichael's friend, Wyatt Beard, said he'd known the officer since kindergarten, and he didn't know how to sum up his best friend's life in new words. I knew that when I needed him, he would be there, Beard said. It didn't matter that I lived 10 hours away. All I had to do was pick the phone up. I'm really going to miss that. Rick Bergen, Arlington Police Department chaplain, read a letter from McMichael's wife, APD officer Lynette Rochelle Holland McMichael, which said the couple had plans of growing old together and that when he died, it turned her world upside down. I'm grateful that God blessed me with you, Bergen read from the letter. I would rather have the 4 years that I spent with you than never having experienced your love at all. During his time as an officer in the motorcycle unit, McMichael became the president of the Arlington chapter of the Iron Circle Law Enforcement Motorcycle Club. Club's website featured a memorial post about McMichael using his nickname Boots. Darren was a loving friend, a caring family man, and a soft source of laughter and positivity. His infectious smile could brighten the darkest of days, and his sense of humor was legendary. Boots was always there to lend a helping hand, offer a listening ear, or share a joke to lighten the mood. McMichael grew up in Arlington and attended Sam Houston High School before he received his college education. After the funeral, dozens of high school classmates and some of McMichael's friends gathered at Jay Gilligan's Bar and Grill to share stories and reminisces. The group sat at tables sharing tales and throwing back appetizers at a restaurant they had known for locals. And in a final note, nearly 5 months after the Arlington Police motorcycle officer was killed in a hit-and-run crash, Dallas County sheriffs say they have a suspect in custody. According to the Dallas County Sheriff's Office, 26-year-old Joshua Quintero Watson of Jackson, Mississippi, was arrested in North Texas by members of a U.S. Marshal Task Force on a warrant related to a crash that killed the Arlington Police motorcycle officer Darren McMichael. Today's show is dedicated to Officer McMichael. Is also dedicated to all the brave men and women that serve in our as first responders, be they law enforcement, firefighters, or emergency services. We also dedicate this show to the brave men and women that serve in our military, from the birth of this nation through today and into our hopeful future. And we dedicate to them this song by Tiffany. May God bless each and every one.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free, we led with grace. Let it be seen, from sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, Father, Mother, sister, brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other, oh, for the soul of the nation, for all the next generation. Let us be known as people of honor, humble and bold, faithful through fire. Let us hold firm to our convictions with wide open hearts, eager to listen. Oh, Father, Mother, sister, brother,
for the soul of the nation.
Whoop, there we go. Getting the hang of this. Getting the hang of this. Anyway, I love that song. I really do. I mean, she does such a fantastic job.
Very touching.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've been meaning to reach out to her. She's got some new stuff coming out, and they want her to come back on. So I got to get a hold of the guy handling her and say, yeah, let's get her back on. She is so fantastic. What a patriot. What an absolute fantastic patriot. Man, I don't even know where to start on this next story I pulled out, Curtis. Actually, somewhere along the way, I should give you a heads up and warning about some of the stuff I'm pulling out so you know what I'm going to hit you with.
All right.
All right. Well, there's a new magazine called Gun Pulse, and they posted this article. Here's the heading. Federal judge rules illegal aliens have Second Amendment liberties. Okay. For that one, I think we need this. You reading what I'm putting on the screen? You see what I'm putting on the screen?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Illegal aliens now Second Amendment liberties. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I heard about that a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
I thought they were against the Second Amendment, really.
Well, United States District Judge Sharon Coleman ruled that an illegal alien who was charged with owning a firearm would be cleared under the Second Amendment. Herberto, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name, Carabaya Flores was charged with possession of a firearm while illegally or unlawfully in the United States after he was caught. And guess where he was caught? Oh, you just would love this. I'll give you three guesses and you'll probably get it right on the first guess.
Texas?
No. What is the most gun illiberal? What is the most gun restricted?
California.
No, actually Chicago. In Chicago. He was caught in Chicago with a handgun. And Coleman ruled for the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois on behalf of the illegal alien, asserting that non-violent circumstances of his arrest do not support a finding that he poses a risk to public safety, such that he cannot be trusted to use a weapon responsibly. Now, if you and I were to cross into Illinois and enter Chicago and be in possession of a firearm that we may legally own in our state of residence and be in possession of a concealed weapons permit legally possessed in our state, right, we would be arrested in Chicago.
That's right.
Because we do not have reciprocity to enter into Chicago with our Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, whatever. Because they don't have reciprocity with us here. Mm-hmm. So you and I would be arrested and charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. Well, yet an illegal alien who enters our country, commits a crime, crosses the whole width and breadth of the country from the Mexican border all the way up to the Great Lakes in Chicago, and he has a firearm. Do you think he's having that firearm for just self-protection or to do something with it?
Well, the problem is they're looking at these, as they call them, undocumented, but I call them illegals, as citizens with rights that they really don't have because they're not lawful citizens. Mm-hmm. They are interlopers and they do not belong here. They have no rights, but the left would, you know, have you believe that they do have rights by giving them, you know, licenses and things like that, you know, welfare, food stamps. So they must be citizens, you know, they're getting all this, they're getting educated.
You know, we accord those that come to our country certain liberties that we earned as American citizens. Our founding fathers gave it to them. And the stipulation was that it was for the citizens of this country. And if you are here legally, we will extend those same liberties. However, with a caveat to to enjoy the full liberties that we do, we would request that you do become a U.S. citizen. So in order to possess a firearm legally here in the United States, you must be what? First and foremost, a U.S. citizen. But she is now giving someone who's not here legally, who is not a citizen of the United States, the rights and liberties that we as Americans only possess.
So I guess if a terrorist come here with a bomb and whatnot, he's okay for doing that.
Oh, but it's a nonviolent crime, his being here. It's not a violent crime for him being here. So what do you think he's going to be doing with the bomb? I'm sorry. He's not going to be marching the Macy Day Parade and pretending it's an Easter egg. Or maybe he will be, because maybe a suicide bomber. Who knows?
Well, it's just a science project.
Yeah. Let's see if I can juggle these things. You know, the stupidity of this is mind-boggling. You know, you and I have to jump through hoops. We have to go through background checks and so forth. You know, in many states, you have to go and take classes in order that you can take them. You have a waiting period in other states. In New York, you must have prove a reason for you to be in possession of that firearm. A reason. So a normal everyday citizen can't possess a firearm unless they can show to a court a reason that they must possess it. They are a store owner carrying a lot of cash, or they're running a security business and requires you to be armed, or something like that. You have to have a reason. Or you're a law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. But if you're the average everyday Joe in New York, no, you can't. Yet this judge in Chicago just said, yes, an illegal alien has more rights than you as an American citizen. Duh? Really? An illegal alien has more rights than an American citizen who has done everything lawfully and legally all their life.
Well, that's why we have to win in November, because what Trump says is true. If we don't win this, we lost our country. I mean, look, Biden wasn't even in office 2 days, and he pretty much, with executive orders, undid everything that was put in place by Trump to keep this country on the straight and narrow, including border security, and that included walls to be built and put up. And now he's going to blame Republicans over some issues. Supposedly Congress didn't approve some bill or something. But all he needs to do is just break out the old pen, treaty pen, and sign another executive order and restore what he took away.
Curtis, we are going to add a face to our show that is only made for radio. We got Mark, the one, the only Mark Tapscott of the Epoch Times, or as I say, Epic Times.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, Mark. Curtis,
how y'all doing?
All right.
We're having fun. We're talking about this judge in the Northern District of Illinois that said an illegal alien, even though he's here illegally in the United States, it's a nonviolent crime, and he can be in possession of a firearm. He was arrested for an illegal possession of a firearm. He's an illegal alien. And she says, no. His Second Amendment rights exist for this illegal alien. I mean, Mark, this is the banner I put up. Here we go. What do you say to that banner? What are you kidding me?
That's... Is that a federal judge or a state judge?
It is a United States District Judge, Sharon Coleman. Yes, and she is with the Northern District of Illinois.
Well, I don't know. I'm from out of town and all, but my guess would be that she is probably an Obama or Biden candidate.
I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. You just can't make this up. And we have, and they're saying there's maybe 7.5 to 20 million illegal aliens that we had just accorded the Second Amendment to.
Well, it's just a district court. It's just one. We'll see.
Oh man, I that's our laugh for the day. If it wasn't
Dallas, so get serious.
Oh man, I had pulled a bunch of things out for you. We had the House just passed the budget, and right. we're going into a holiday weekend, so they're going to be going on government shutdown. Do you foresee this being passed in the Senate, or do you see it's going to be a done deal? Yeah. Now, it's 5,000 pages. Does anyone know what's in this thing yet?
Probably not. Not even the people who wrote the bill, because in that big a piece of legislation, by the time you get to the end of it, you've forgotten what you did at the beginning of it. So, you know.
I mean, I'm looking for the notes. I was shuffling through stuff. Oh, here we go. Here's your stuff. Because you recently were writing an article in the Epoch Times about Biden sort of like taking money that Congress designated for certain things such as border security and using it for other transaction agreements. And that's not constitutional. And that's actually violating what Congress intended the money to be for. So now we've got this monstrous bill that the House just passed under the new speaker. And I'm understanding there's a lot of pork in it and there's a lot of strange things in there.
Yeah. Well, guys, anytime Congress passes a spending bill, there's going to be lots of things that we might not think are appropriate expenditures of tax dollars. That's just a given. They've gone back to having earmarks. We've seen that in recent months. And I don't know the figure for the number of earmarks or the total value of them in this particular piece. I suspect it's probably a good deal more than the 6,000 that were in the earlier appropriations bill that funded, I think, 30% of the government. This one funds the biggest part of the federal government. So I'm sure it is chock full of earmarks.
Now, what I was scanning through last night, it was like there's six parts of the appropriation bill that pass and then six that are put to the sideline. And they're saying if they don't get these other six passed, after a certain point, government will shut down.
Yeah, and the deadline is midnight tonight, the 22nd. But the fix is in. The Senate will pass it, I'm sure. And, you know, there is a chance that Senator Rand Paul, for example, of Kentucky, is going to mount a filibuster. But, you know, I think the longest filibuster on record is only about 13 hours. So, you know, he might be able to delay it into tomorrow. But that won't make any difference.
So we don't have a Jimmy Stewart movie here.
No, we don't. No, this is more like the, I don't know, the Titanic going down. I don't know. You know, I hate to say it, but.
Well, I heard some talking heads going, oh, but we're not going after Social Security or Medicare, the entitlement programs. Wait. I paid into Social Security. You paid into, Curtis paid into Social Security. That's our money we ask government to hold onto for us. And they don't pay us interest for the money they held onto us for all these years.
That's right.
So that we have to beg for them to give us our money back. And in the interim, we pay a premium for Medicare, so we are paying an insurance premium for the medical benefits. We're not getting them for free, so how are they entitlement programs, and how am I supposed to feel so happy they're not touching them?
Well, I tell you, the fact that they're not touching them ought to be a tremendous concern for every American, and not just those of us who are, old enough to be drawing on Social Security or Medicare. Both of those programs are literally within a few years of going bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, they're already bankrupt. But officially, they will, I think, Medicare in 7 years and Social Security in 10. And what that means is when that happens, and it will if there's no change in course between now and then, Social Security, for example, there will be an automatic cut of 20-some% in everybody's benefit. And I'm not even sure that that'll be sufficient to keep at least some stream of support going to Social Security recipients. We'll have to see. That is the biggest, other than the $35 trillion national debt, the forthcoming bankruptcy of Medicare and Social Security are the two biggest financial problems facing the government. And they're not going away. And Congress and presidents can keep kicking the can down the road, but the problem is not going away. It just keeps getting worse and closer.
You know, I've been hearing some of the tom-toms in the background, and people are starting to mention the fair tax again and bringing it back.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing a lot of rumblings for it. And now, having read the book, which I have a signed autographed copy of, it would fund the Social Security and Medicare and all the programs we have without having the odious IRS with all of their enforcement agents and everything else. Mm-hmm. And then we get to choose how much tax we pay the government. Yep. So if I don't want to buy that 54-inch screen TV and spend $200 in tax on it, and I only wanted to buy this little 27-inch and pay $20 tax, it's my choice. And then we get to fund the government by our choice. And we would fund all these programs, but that would be too much common sense, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, it would. You know, there has been a discussion, public policy debate going on in this country for at least since before Reagan became president, because the Republicans, particularly beginning in the 70s, were talking all the time about cutting taxes. And from that, you know, we've had a debate going since then about whether we should some kind of fundamental tax reform, either to go to a flat tax where, you know, you pay 10% of your gross income or 15% or however much they decide, or to go to a fair tax, which rather than taxing income, taxes consumption. And I think there are great persuasive arguments on behalf of both of those approaches. My sister actually was very active in the advocacy efforts on behalf of the fair tax. So we've had some interesting discussions about that.
Well, it's funny because after I read the book, I was getting a ride. This is when Enterprise used to pick you up and bring you over to the car.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore. Surprise, surprise.
Can't afford it.
This young woman that picked me up in the car, it was obvious she was an Obama supporter. And the radio was on, and I heard they were talking about the fair tax, and she was like starting to get mad. And I said, wait a minute, let me explain it to you. And once I broke it down to her, she goes, you know what? I like it.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I like it. Yeah. But what I'm hearing also now is that they want to tax our Social Security.
Well, not only that, guys, the Biden people are also talking about, you may recall in the State of the Union address, President Biden made reference to the claimed fact that the top 100 richest people in America only pay an average tax of 3%.
I was screaming at the TV.
The only way you get to that figure is if you include in the taxable income what's called unrealized gains.
Yep.
Now, the simplest way to look at it is if your house, the tax assessment on it goes up $10,000 in a year. According to Biden, you need to be taxed on that, even though you haven't seen a penny in your bank account as a result of that.
Or you can't pay it. So what happens then? You get a tax lien on your house. You lose your house. You can't pay it. You're now forced to go into sustainable living in these urban areas.
Yeah.
Where you're not even able to drive a car anymore. You've got to take public transportation. Yeah. And oh, yeah, it's electric vehicles.
And that's ultimately what... the folks on the left want for all three of us and everybody else in America, that we're all jammed into big high rises and the only way we can get around is on a bus that may or may not arrive, and to go to stores where there probably were going to be not much on the shelves and long lines waiting to get in. In other words, if that sounds familiar to you, we've all seen it before in socialist countries. That's mm-hmm. where they want to go.
Wait a minute. Didn't that happen under COVID? Long lines just to get toilet paper?
Yeah, it sure did. That was a preview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we already know what's going to happen to us under COVID, you know, the lockdowns. Oh, wait a minute. Let's not forget the censorship.
That's right. Can you imagine anybody wanting to censor Curtis? I mean, he's a smart guy. Maybe that's why they want to censor.
Hey, I'm still stewing over the high food costs, energy prices. Mm-hmm. My electric bill for my home has been over $400.
Yeah. Ditto. I live in Maryland.
I think these are the things we should accentuate when we, you know, campaign, mm-hmm. you know, Republicans. I really don't hear a lot of that. But if you could focus on what's hurting people, I think we have a great chance of, defeating these folks, even if they try to cheat. You know, I think we can overwhelmingly, you know, win.
I hope you're right, Curtis. I really do, because, mm-hmm. you know.
There's a hope and a prayer.
Lots of prayer. We need lots of prayer. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mentioned censorship for a reason, because you also had another excellent article up in the Epoch Times dealing with government working hand in hand with social media tech companies to censor us. And at the start of the show, I was talking because I've gotten kicked off of YouTube at least twice now. I'm on my third try. I've been kicked off of Facebook three other times. Heaven forbid I say the word COVID, and all of a sudden everyone goes, and it started actually before COVID, where they kind of like shadow banned you.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's outright censorship, and we're not seeing it stop. We see it nonstop. And now it's getting to the point where they're going into our bank accounts. Heaven forbid you say God or guns or MAGA.
Yeah. You know, what you're referring to, Annie, is the FBI asking, quote unquote, the major banks in the country and other financial institutions to do searches on their customers' checking accounts, savings accounts, investment accounts, and to do searches in there for purchases of things that might include the phrase religious text, such as the Bible, or firearms purchases, or anything having to do with a COVID kind of contribution to a group that is opposing mandates. And that is a blatant violation of every citizen's Fourth Amendment right, guaranteed against illegal searches and seizures. That's what it is.
Absolutely.
And the FBI is doing it, having financial companies do it for them. And since it's an arm's length transaction, the argument that they make is that, well, then it's not the government doing it. But of course, it is the government doing it.
Exactly. I mean, I had a personal experience. I went into a place to purchase something, and it happened to have been a pawn shop, but it was a pawn and gun shop.
Oh, yeah.
And no sooner did I get out the front door into my car, my phone bleeped, and my card had been frozen.
Really?
And I go, what? Yeah. I'm talking a matter of 5 minutes. And I come home. It happened to have been through PayPal, of all things. Shock, 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 right?
Yeah.
And I get on the phone with them. And I said, why are you, you know, flagging my account? And what's the problem here? I've been with them since the 1990s. So what is your problem? Well, it was a suspicious transaction. Why? Because it's got the name Gun in the title of the store I was in? No. Yeah. Release the account. Which they did. Yeah. But yeah, for someone small like me, I'm a nobody. So imagine if you are someone like you, Mark, on the front page.
No, but let me tell you, my wife just this morning had an experience with Facebook censorship. She tried to repost a post that somebody else had put up quoting the New Testament, where Jesus is talking about in the Gospel of John, I believe, 10th chapter, my sheep hear my voice and they follow me. And there was a photograph with that post of a bunch of sheep, just a bunch of sheep standing in a field, you know. Claudie tried to repost that, and Facebook would not allow it to be reposted. And she got a note that that is violent or graphic content. Can you believe it?
You're as timid as sheep does not come to mind when you think of sheep.
No,
I've never known anyone to be trampled to death by sheep.
Well, it's probably possible, but that's what happens when you have an anonymous, distant bureaucracy, whether it's in government or at the will of government, that has the power to determine whether what you and I can read. That is censorship, pure and simple.
You know, it's ironic because last night, my husband, 3.5 months now, were watching a special, and it had to do with a certain secret things within government and everything. And one of them focused on the FBI. And what most people don't know, there is an agency within the FBI that is covert. And they're taught how to go into homes and other places without being known while someone is there to do a lot of things that are normally under law enforcement would be unconstitutional and illegal. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm watching this unfold on the TV screen, wondering why aren't people outraged by this? This is not the FBI that was originally formed. It should have been FBI separate from the CIA, but yet now Brennan was able to write out a little memo and saying, I'm taking over the FBI and the CIA, and no one blinks an eye. And now we have them crossing over, the CIA within the United States, the FBI outside the United States. No. That's not what the original intent was. There is
a great book out, Annie, that I strongly encourage all of your listeners to look at, to read. It's called Big Intel. And it's written by a guy, J. Michael Waller, who I know. He's a veteran of the intelligence community. And that book lays it out in detail how the CIA and the rest of the intelligence community and the FBI have been converted into woke institutions. And as a result, they don't do what they're supposed to do. They're doing other things, focusing on, for example, gay rights within an agency and people who are not gay having the right attitude towards people who are. You know, people are, you saw the video yesterday, there's, you know, all kinds of criminals coming across the border. But the FBI, what are they doing about that?
No. Instead, you have a judge that turns around and says an illegal alien has the Second Amendment rights that right. You and I are denied if we don't do a background check, if we have a felony or any other reason that even in New York State that you have to have a specific purpose for having a gun. You can have your Second Amendment rights. I can have my Second Amendment rights denied. But an illegal alien who's not passing a background check, who's not been vetted, who is not an American citizen, who committed a crime to come into the United States, who possesses a weapon that is illegal for you and I to possess.
Yeah. Curtis, Annie, you know, now that I see you guys and you can see me, we can, you know, I think we're all of the same generation. And Curtis, I don't know about you, Annie, I don't know about you, but this is not the America that I thought it would be.
No, it isn't. And I would like to know who made these people the arbiters of what's acceptable and what isn't. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
We're supposed to have freedom of choice and privacy. We don't have that anymore.
That's true.
My wife is a city council woman here where we live, and a law just passed where anybody that holds office has to divulge all their income.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not too bad if it's kept, you know, private, but yep. they want to put it in the public, you know, arena
yep.
for 10 years. And you have to do this every year. And I don't think it's any of their business. What does that has to do with the job, you assume, you know?
Yeah.
As long as you're not doing anything illegal. And if you are doing something illegal, then they need to catch you.
Yeah. Yeah. I suspect, Curtis, that that law is probably in response to, you know, those pesky journalists that are always trying to find out everything.
Oh, yeah.
I hate to, but I have got to get off of here for now, but we will do this again.
Well, it's nice to finally see you face to face, even though we didn't get to see each other when I was in D.C. in December.
Absolutely.
But maybe if I ever make another trip up, we'll get together and have that cocktail.
Well, let's do it. Curtis.
All right, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless.
Take care.
All right. Mark Dapscott. Check out the Epoch Times. I get it delivered to the house. And for some reason, my nose is itching. So just bear with me, folks. I don't know if it's an allergen. It'll be like a little kitty cat. Rub my nose. But I don't know what it is. It's something in my office when I start sitting at the desk. Maybe I ought to dust it, I think.
Well, you do have cats. And so do
yes,
I.
Yes, seven. But I'm definitely going to check out this book, Big Intel by J. Michael Warner. I'm putting this aside to remind myself to take a look into it. But, you know, it brings up a lot of things when he was talking about censorship. And I just found out, because I post up onto Substack also, and if you have paid subscribers, they're asking you to divulge financial information. And wait a minute, I don't know of any other social media network that I'm on that requires me to divulge financial information. But as I'm finding out, it's not for everyone. It's only for specific people that post. Dr. Malone is the one that made a posting saying that he was really upset because he does have a lot of subscribers and he gets paid for posting up on Substack. You know, people do monetize, and that's one of the main reasons why a lot of people podcast. You know, I'm not to the point where I get money for what I'm doing. I'm sorry, I do have one paid subscriber, and it's my husband's uncle.
Well, you know, the left, they do things incrementally, so they may say, well, this is just for a small section, but give it time, and then they're going to make it mandatory for everyone to report, you know, whatever information they're looking for.
Well, how many people post up on TikTok and monetize? How many people post up on Facebook or any of these other websites that monetize? So, I mean, yeah, if you're earning big bucks, then yeah, you're going to pay your taxes. I can see that, you know, and of course, the social media network is going to turn around, send you a 1099 form saying, this is what you earn monetizing on our website. Fine, that's honest. But to turn around and to publicly disclose to them your personal wealth, income, reserves, or even that mandated of your subscribers, that's a bridge too far.
See, this is one of the reasons why I think the fair tax is so great, because a consumption tax, the government gets the money whenever you purchase something. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason for them to go into your private life. That eliminates it. A straight out consumption tax.
And
they don't
have
to be checking your
statements. The person who collects the tax and remits it to the government is that business, retailer, whatever it is that you're paying for. So if it's goods or services, that person running those goods or services, you know, is the one that's going to sit down and say, all right, fine. I sold X amount of TVs. I collected X amount of tax. Now, this goes to the county. This goes to the state. This goes to the federal government. One, two, three. Which was what they do anyway. So and what they're doing is also eliminating a lot of paperwork. Because now they don't have to keep records for income tax receipts or anything like that. They don't have to hire someone to do their taxes for them. They may get an accountant to come in just to make sure the remittances go into the right place for the right amount of money. So what? They're cutting down on their expenses, which means that goods and services can be less expensive. So people will buy more goods and services because they can afford more. It's a win-win situation. What I don't like about the flat tax is, say, if you say flat tax for a person earning, say, from $5,000 to $20,000, you're paying 10%. And then you go gradually up and up. Well, the person paying 10% on $20,000, okay, can afford that money. The person paying it that same amount of money at $10,000 can't afford that. Of course, you know, the tax brackets are not that small. They're much larger. So the person on the low end is paying the maximum amount of tax on their income, where the person on the high end can afford it. We and that's need, why I don't like it.
We need our leaders on the conservative side and the side of freedom to champion the, you know, consumption tax. I mean, I think people, it would make sense to a lot of people, even on the other side of the aisles, you know, because you're talking about something that hit people in their pocketbooks or purses or whatever they call them today. But
your wallet too.
We don't seem to have champions, you know, except for Trump and maybe a few senators and congressional members.
You know, we do need to make our elected officials listen to us. And from what I'm hearing about what got pushed through in the House with this bill, and like I said, it's 5,000 pages and no one really truly knows what's in it. Mm-hmm. They're doing it just to say, hey, listen, we kept government running, so come and reelect us. You know, we had here in South Carolina, they passed what they call constitutional carry. There's some loopholes in there that doesn't exactly make a constitutional carry, but it's close, as close as we're going to get at this point. We can always push back and get some of these other things knocked out. But the RINOs jumped onto this bill because it had in there what they wanted, but yet it had constitutional carry attached to it. And now they're going to go out there and campaign. And those that were campaigning against them because they were not pro-gun, they're going to say, oh, wait a minute, that's a lie. We are pro-gun because, you see, we voted for this constitutional carry law. It gave them an out and a way to get themselves reelected. And this is what we're looking at the House. We've got to stop. We've got to turn around and hold their feet to the fire and says, we're not going to buy your bullshit. We know why you voted for that. You didn't vote for it because you believed in what we believe in. You voted just so you can get yourself elected. And you know, we're going to turn around and say, well, you kissed our butt, but so kiss mine back. No, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not.
Well, the way I see what I was talking about here, where I live, a lot of people who are in office now and are going to leave because they don't think it's the government's business, knowing their personal finances. So I can see this in another way as far as the government looking at it. Okay, those who are electing to leave office because of this, what do they have to hide? Well, it's not that you have to hide anything. You just don't think it's government business. Mm-hmm. But it is another way for the government to focus on certain people. Mm-hmm. They left office. Let's keep an eye on them. Let's investigate these folks. So, I mean, it's like a double-edged sword, you know. The blade favors both sides of the sword, favors the government, not you.
Yeah. You know, there are filings that you do have to make to say, you know, you've got X amount in the bank for your campaign. You know, there are financial disclosures.
Right, for that.
Mm-hmm. It should not be open to anyone and everyone. It should be carefully controlled, again, to be secure in your persons and papers. And that was the purpose of that amendment in the Constitution. And that is not what we were getting. It looks like our next guest is coming in. If he would activate his camera, that might be good. Otherwise, we got a blank face here. Let's see if we can get him to come in. And we've got a blank image here. Okay, Jack, if you want to activate your camera, we can pull you in here.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we got you, Jack. Okay. How are you doing today? Good. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
There you are. There we go.
Here's the lift off.
Welcome to the wackiest show possible on podcasting.
Hey, Jack.
For 14 years straight. Well, let me pull up the stuff. I'm shuffling around because I just had Mark Tapscott from the Epoch Times here. I love that man. He's been a guest on this show. Oh, good Lord. I think ever since I started. But Jack, you are the legal fellow at the Edmund Meese III Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. And there is so much going on. I don't even know where to start with you. We touched briefly on it with Mark about government censorship and using tech and social media to quell our voices. And they always seem to go after their political opponents on the right, those that have a voice like mine, censorship. And I've already been banned on YouTube twice, Facebook three times. So I've got the red badge of courage, but I'm back up and running anyway. But we have government so now intrusive into what we do that everything we say or do is being scrutinized. And it goes back, I would say COVID-19, but I'm saying actually long before that. And they just use it as an excuse to go further into it. If you remember the Patriot Act, which we all screamed about when they passed it, it's like, wait a minute, you're going to intrude and decide what I say. You're going to listen to my phone calls, my text messages. But it's going beyond that. Your mic. What happened to your mic? We still got no sound from you, Jack.
I thought you had. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now.
Okay, sorry. It's the problem is the camera's on one thing and the microphone's on another. So that's why I'm having issues here. I apologize. Let's see if we can't get this to work.
I think you're right. A headset in.
Oh, no, I can hear you fine, as long as you can
hear. We're getting an echo.
Oh, that I don't have.
Okay, how is it now? Is it good now? That's good now. Okay, we got it now. Okay. We got it working. Houston, again, lift off. It's SpaceX. Let's splash down and crash.
Well, you're not wrong to point back to things like the Patriot Act. In some ways, the origins of the types of controversies we're seeing now, which are specifically about the interaction of the federal government with major social media platforms, in a lot of ways, the roots and the origins stretch back to the beginning of the century. And it involves this translation of a national security and surveillance program that was at its inception intended for external use, like use abroad, the detection of certain threats. And, you know, over its ascendance, the course of its ascendance and its growth, it's come in certain insidious ways to be directed internally, right? Directed to American citizens. Directed within the United States territory, where, you know, certain agencies, national security apparatuses really aren't supposed to be operating. But nonetheless, a lot of the logic has come back home, and it's come to haunt us as citizens in ways that I don't think were appreciated, you know, early on when these first surveillance programs were being adopted. But now we're seeing a particular adaptation of it that's concerning, because it affects so many of us so directly. And that's the extent to which the national security apparatus or the national law enforcement apparatus can be used to bring coercive pressure to bear on the full array of social media platforms, of course, the very largest, but even some lesser known ones, in such a way that those platforms can be made to remove certain voices and certain views based only on the content of those views. And I mean, of course, anybody who's at all familiar with our First Amendment jurisprudence knows that content-based restrictions are some of the most invidious, most discouraged types of restrictions. That, you know, other types of restrictions on speech are a little bit more tolerated. They're not subject to review that's as searching or as strict. But content-based restriction is considered to be just about the worst of the worst as speech restrictions go. Now, part of what we have to take into account here is that because it's an interaction between government agencies, the White House, the FBI, the CDC in some of the most recent instances, and private platforms, we have to be a little bit careful about tossing around our views on First Amendment protections too lightly. And I say that because, in essence, you know, the social media platforms, whether it's Facebook or you know, YouTube belonging to Google, these are private businesses, right? They are run for profit. They have, I mean, they're publicly traded, but these are private enterprises ultimately. And generally speaking, private enterprises are not bound by the First Amendment, right? Because the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And it's been interpreted to more broadly to envelop really any federal government entity. But private businesses are typically not subject to the First Amendment, right? This is why somebody who owns a kind of private blog of theirs, you know, I go all the time to read like my favorite Michigan sports blog. And, you know, they can go and edit content without being in violation of the First Amendment, because fundamentally they're a private party. They don't have to abide by the First Amendment. So the nexus here, and one of the legal challenges, something that the Supreme Court is having to deal with at this very moment, is when does government pressure, whether it's through threats and coercion or whether it's through encouragement, when does it become so great that the action of a private actor like, you know, Google or Facebook or Twitter become effectively state action and thus subject to the First Amendment?
You know, I hear that standards, you didn't follow community standards. And yet if they were to use those community standards and you look at other postings on that very same platform where they do promote violence, they do promote jihad or whatever, that's perfectly fine. But heaven forbid I say ivermectin is a good medicine to help with COVID. All of a sudden, no, you violated community standards. If I turned around and said a man's a man, a woman's a woman, that becomes hate speech. But you now have where you have a religious belief where I believe a man is a man, a woman is a woman. That's what God created. That's God, what God intended. And no matter what you do, your DNA 10,000 years from now is still going to say you were born a man. That's what God intended. That's my religious view. You may take a scientific view, but that's a view. But suddenly becomes hate speech when there was no hate intended.
Yeah, so it's another one of these areas that, I mean, in some ways, it doesn't make it, you know, to the user, to the individual user who finds that they are, you know, that their account is under threat, that they're being deplatformed, or if they're not being outright deplatformed, they figure out that their particular posts are not actually getting seen, even by friends and people in their online social networks. You know, it's in some ways, It almost doesn't matter whether it's the platforms doing this of their own accord or the federal government. I say almost. I'm exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's scarier. It's scary enough to have something like the weight of a major corporation sort of downgrading your views. It's scarier still when that enormous, almost oligopolistic amount of private market power is paired then with some of the weight and threats of the federal government's regulatory authority. Then you're really in quite a bit of trouble. But we saw interesting instances, particularly as it pertained to COVID, where, say, in 2021, you know, shortly after the Biden administration has come into power, as shortly after President Biden's been sworn into the White House, we see a push to coerce social media platforms to remove views that are not in violation of their community standards, right? Mm-hmm. We know that these platforms revise their standards with some frequency. Sometimes they do it in ways that appear really opportunistic. They appear to try and cut out certain types of viewpoints or give themselves space to do so. It's troubling, but it's a separate question, right? As long as they're doing that on their own. But you have instances in 2021, and these are in the court records, particularly from the Western District of Louisiana, where the case that just hit the Supreme Court was first brought. And the Western District had evidence before it that said platforms would now and again stand up to some of the government bullying, right? If a White House official was reaching out and saying, we need to get rid of some of these vaccine hesitant posts, sometimes the platforms, Facebook would respond and say, well, ultimately, this doesn't violate our community standards, right? We can maybe downgrade its virality. We can make sure it's not circulated quite as broadly, but these don't violate our community standards. We really don't have a basis for removing these. And what you see is over the course of weeks and months, this mounting pressure that comes, again, mostly from the White House, but also from other executive branch agencies. Like I said, the CDC was among the parties. And you have them bringing this considerable pressure to bear until several of the platforms just out and change their community standards to reflect the government's views. As I said, that's really one of the scarier scenarios to see evidence of. It's bad enough when there's sort of private views, you know, belonging to the C-suite executives of Silicon Valley corporations that are changing things. But when they can be coerced by still more powerful actors, that's when you're really veering into scary territory. And one would think into the realm of a First Amendment violation, although we will see. The court won't rule on this case, which I should probably mention by name since I've alluded to it several times. This is the case of Murthy v. Missouri, Vivek Murthy being the current Surgeon General. So he's a stand-in for all of the federal parties. But this case, Murthy v. Missouri, was just heard by the Supreme Court. And they'll have to decide by June whether or not the kind of pressure that the government brought to bear was sufficient to be called coercive. I'm using the word coercive in a sort of layman's sense. I think the evidence points in that direction. But the court will have to say as a matter of law whether or not it was coercive.
Yeah, it's funny because a friend of mine sent me a message the other day that I'm the most shadow banned person on X. Mm-hmm. So he said shadow banned. I said, yeah.
Hey, Jack.
Yes.
We know that it's our technology today that has allowed the government to do a lot of spying on us, the citizen. What's going to happen in 20 years after they convince most of the non-thinkers here in this country to install chips in their bodies? I mean, the power that's going to give government on where you go, they may be even listening in on your thoughts. I mean, what kind of future is that for our children and grandchildren?
A dark one, not one I'd like to be a part of if it could be avoided. It's
scary.
Of course. The stuff of science fiction can take us by surprise and become reality much sooner than we expect. And its instantiations, the way it becomes real, are not always benign. I see some of these concerns around. I mean, yes, there was the recent instance of a Neuralink chip actually being successfully implanted in somebody's brain. I saw that. Can't say I followed this story too closely. Maybe of more broader and more immediate interest would be some of the supposed developments in generative AI, particularly in the large language model bots that are gaining some traction in, you know, industries like law, where I was practicing until I came to this side of things. And they always come with wanted benefits, right? People don't adopt them because they're looking to annihilate humanity or looking to make things worse. They always come with vaunted benefits about how they're going to be labor saving. They're going to be more efficient. They're going to free us up to have time to do the things we want to do. Promises of this sort, more specific ones, depending on the technology, but I'm going to generalize here. And I think we have a certain human responsibility to resist the seduction, to resist some of the allure. That doesn't mean we can always successfully put ourselves in harm's way to stop the march of technology. I wish it were so. But if we can't stop it outright, if the clocks can't be rolled back on certain technological developments and their applications, people ought to take it on themselves individually to do a better job of resisting the allure. Because the social media cases in some ways illustrate just how far things can get in a short period of time. You know, before 2010, the notion that major social media platforms would have played anywhere near the role that they are currently playing in our national discourse, in the dissemination of news, in the dissemination of views, And let's face it, we certainly have good reason to be skeptical about any branch of government, federal, state, or otherwise, turning its security apparatus on citizens. But we also can't just blithely discount some of the ways in which the existence of major social media platforms does pose real risks, some of them national security related. That's not totally a fever dream of the, you know, Department of Homeland Security. There are real risks to be accounted for, and they've been made possible precisely because social media is so widely used, so readily accessible, and so heavily depended on by so many individuals. And you know, from your own experience, notwithstanding some of the shadow banning, I'm sure you appreciate some of the goods that it's made available, right? A platform for one's voice, ability to reach a broader audience, connect with like-minded fellows out there. You know, all that's difficult to discount. But yeah, the notion that chips could be implanted in our brains is utterly terrifying, and I wish it were totally unrealistic, but mm-hmm. the news of just this past week tells us that it's feasible in some sense.
They've been talking about doing implants for your credit card or for other things, or doing barcodes, doing a lot of different things. But already the Chinese have developed the AI to the point where if you walk past a certain billboard or a sign, or you look at your phone, it's going to determine what the mood is on your face and how you're reacting to something. And the next thing you know, you may find that you've got no credit in the bank account anymore. You can't get yourself a job. They're using that to control the population, which is what makes AI so very scary. Now, if you put an implant in there that could possibly redirect your neurons in your brain to change the way you're thinking, this will make looking frontal lobotomies like a kid's toy.
Yeah, it's in some ways it's a good example of the truism. There's nothing new under the sun. We did have an era at the beginning of the
1950s. Yeah, 1950s lobotomies going around in vans.
Well, the way I see things today with our youth, they are heavily monitored. I mean, any big city you go into, there's cameras everywhere. So I think they're being indoctrinated to be accepting of this. And most of them didn't live 30, 40 years ago when we had some semblance of freedom where, you know, you can come and go without being monitored. And I think that is part of the overall scheme is to indoctrinate these kids into believing this is the way it should be.
Yeah, I think that recalibrating people's sense of what is normal is a major part of the project. And you know, one can sound almost conspiratorial or conspiracy minded when talking about it. I don't mean to suggest necessarily that there's something like a centralized design or plan being, you know, implemented from on high. In certain instances, I don't doubt that the power is coming from on high from the federal government, that they have certain issue areas where they feel they have to intervene and exercise control. And COVID is a great example of that. Actually, the three issue areas that are at the core of the Supreme Court case, which would be in one category, broadly speaking, COVID-related information, another broad category, election information, specifically around the 2020 election and mail-in ballots, and then you know, stories that are a bit more sordid and public interesty, like the Hunter Biden laptop scandal. So these were sort of the main subject areas where the government was intervening from on high and trying to change the narrative, and not just by engaging in its own speech in the public square and trying to persuade people, which of course it's entitled to do, but by trying to make sure that dissenting viewpoints were not heard. And not just cranks, not just underinformed people, highly intelligent people with well-resourced and researched views, empirically validated views. I mean, two of the named plaintiffs in the litigation are epidemiologists Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff, the former of Stanford University, the latter was late of Harvard. You know, not that we should make too much of credentials, but here are people who are experts, conceded experts in their field, who merely had views differing from those espoused by the administration. And a concerted effort was made spanning multiple executive agencies up to and including the White House itself to see that these views didn't make it out there and that the public perception of what was a normal view on matters of masking, on matters of herd immunity, on the wisdom of lockdowns, you know, again, a concerted effort to change the information ecosystem in such a way that we would misperceive what was normal. So that is an instance where there is kind of a top-down view of things. But broadly speaking, maybe one of the scarier recognitions is that that's not always necessary for people's sense of what is normal to become warped. Sometimes it can be the simple interaction of market forces playing to our lesser angels, our desires for comfort and convenience can allure us into adopting new types of technology, new forms of supposed labor-saving technology that can, or information technology that can just change our perception of what's normal. And that may come about without somebody, be it an executive or a government official, intentionally trying to change it. But it comes about.
Well, I can take you down a rabbit hole when you go into that. I mean, you have these refrigerators that will tell you on your phone what's inside your refrigerator. I'm sorry. Phones are hacked. The systems are hacked. And why do I want the rest of the world to know what's inside my refrigerator? And yet you've got on the converse side, people trying to restrict access to the internet. And for example, how dare you turn around and tell my child they can't have unlimited access to the internet, where we don't allow them to go out and buy cigarettes and liquor or drive a car. We don't want them exposed to pornography. And yet they're fighting so that these kids have unlimited access. It should be actually the parents' decision, not government's. But then on the converse side, you then have TikTok. And we can open up a whole nother can of worms on TikTok with the Chinese government controlling it, because everyone knows it's owned by the Chinese Communist Party. And yet we have it in our government machines, our business machines, and TikTok. They have access to every aspect of our lives here in America, and yet we don't feel the need to restrict them. Now, government is turning around, tossing around these different types of legislations. Should TikTok be sold? Blah, blah, blah. Wait a minute. It shouldn't be in business machines. It shouldn't be in government machines. But it's up to the individual to decide whether or not they want it in their home. TikTok's another story. That's a whole nother, like I said, can of worms. So we're dealing with this issue on three different fronts.
I think you're right. It's a bit of a sad story at the moment, because I think there's no shortage of villains, public and private, and there's not quite as many heroes, or one doesn't hear about them nearly as often. This particular case happens to be about government coercion, but a case that was heard maybe only 2 or 3 weeks ago, again before the Supreme Court, were the net choice cases. And that had much more to do with it. I mean, it's nominally about state regulation, so I'm not going to pretend that there isn't a state party involved there too, or a government party. But really, it's about bad corporate actors, right? It's more about this problem of platforms opportunistically getting rid of certain types of speech that they consider, I don't know, objectionable, hateful, something. But that too, a whole swath of the American population is utterly normal and reasonable, right? We're not talking about incitements to violence. We're not talking about things that frankly don't enjoy legal protection, right? I mean, you can almost put aside who is censoring, right? Whether it's a private party that doesn't necessarily have the obligation to abide by the First Amendment or the government, there are certain types of speech that simply are not protected. Now, hate speech is a category that's alien to the First Amendment, right? Anytime people tell you that there's a hate speech carve out, that they're not thinking of American constitutional law. They might be thinking of, you know, what European governments restrict, because they do.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a case not too long ago involving a sort of obscene band name that a group tried to trademark, and the court was clear. There's no hate speech carve out to the First Amendment. That said, speech incitements to immediate acts of violence have never been protected. So there are types of speech that doesn't matter if you're a social media platform or a government regulator, you're not bound to respect speech that is a call to violence in that way.
Well, we're down to our last few minutes of the show. It has gone so fast. I'm looking at the clock and I just said, oh my God. Well, Jack, it has been a pleasure having you on. I'll welcome you back anytime. I love you guys over there, and I miss Tom because Tom used to send me, I said, Tom, pick me someone out. He'd send me someone every week. But there's so much more that we could cover, and we got the election coming up. We've talked about so many more things that how it's influenced the election, and now Trump has his Trump media merging now with the DWAC, the stock that just was voted to trade to go on the merger, which I own. So I hope to make a few dollars.
Well done.
You're listening, Trump? I own a few shares. Not a lot, a few. So there's so much more we could have gotten into. But Jack, it has been a pleasure, and enjoy your weekend as we go into Easter week.
Yes, indeed. I wish you all a very blessed one, and thanks for having me on.
Take care, Jack.
God bless. Check out Jack over at heritage.org. Curtis, like I said, we're down to our last few minutes, and it's time for us to rock and roll and get out of here.
Yeah, so, next Friday is Good Friday, so we will not be
live. No, we will not be live. We will have a pre-recorded that we will upload, and that will be a lot of fun. So I thank everyone for watching and listening, and we will upload to other platforms that have been missing us live at this moment, but we're going with these platforms for here now, and we'll be all over the place soon. So we say good night and God bless, and leave you with our new show ending. Here we go.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross, mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. And I still believe in God we trust and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not America. Do you hear our battle cry across America? We've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their eyes. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. For the friends I have loved and lost, and I still believe in God we chose and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America. shave America.